This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Welcome to Screen Talk. I'm Ann Thompson.
And I'm Ryan Latanzio.
And we're in the thick of the award season, as usual. You went to the New York Film Critics Circle Awards last night. How did that go?
I did. I went to the New York Film Critics. I'm not in the circle, but I am adjacent to it, I suppose you could say. And, you know, we're at the point already. I mean, it's sorry to say this because it's only January 4th right now, but we are at a point where things start to get predictable. I mean, a lot of the winners are, you know, sort of the preordained ones that we've come to understand, you know, Lily Gladstone winning Best Actress and so forth. But this awards is kind of fun because of the speeches and the presenters. You know, infamously a few years ago, Lady Gaga went on for like 15 minutes. There was nothing of that sort this year, but Paul Dano gave a really nice introduction to Justine Triet, who won for Anatomy of a Fall International. Benny Safdie gave a really nice intro for Scorsese and Killers, which won Best Picture. He, in fact, he said it was his best and bravest movie. Okay, I don't know if I agree with that. And Sammy Birch, the writer of May, December, gave a really wonderfully macabre speech that just shows what a dark sense of humor she has. I mean, we know that from the movie she's written, of course. And also today is Charles Melton's birthday. And so he won Best Supporting Actor and he got a nice seg into his, I think he's 33 or something.
A baby. We're coming off of the Christmas box office, right? And some of what happened over that period of time is that both The Color Purple and Wonka did really well. They scored with audiences, with families, which is sort of, you know, following on this kind of weird year that we had, you know, where it feels like the holdovers, something like that, that touches people's hearts or, you know, benignly entertaining movies like Color Purple, which touches people's hearts, and Wonka, are actually more appealing to people than the old, you know, verities of Marvel, you know, comic books, which finally these superhero movies, you know, went into decline this year. They just lost luster. Although Guardians of the Galaxy did very well. That one is a very happy return for Disney.
And even Quantumania was still on the top 10 box of the year, even though that was excoriated by critics and
audience. It was way lower than it was expected to be.
Yes,
I mean,
exactly.
It used to be billion-dollar generators, you know. And so we're, you know, looking back at last year's box office. It, you know, it's a fascinating picture of a kind of the world turned upside down with Barbie and a female filmmaker, you know, dominating everything. Oppenheimer, this brainy, historic, epic, you know, doing way better than anyone would have expected. Spider-Man, that could have been predicted, but it did even better than the original. And is an amazing hit, not because it's a superhero movie, but because it's innovative and original. And even though it's a sequel, it gives you a lot of new material to respond to. What are some of the things you picked up off of last year's?
Well, I mean, so the total was at $9 billion or something.
It actually got there, which is $2 billion less than before the pandemic when it was 11.
Yeah. And it's still not as high as it was in 2019. But, you know, from 2012 until just about the pandemic, it always kind of hovered around 11 million or I'm sorry, 11 billion or something close to that. And even if we had Dune Part 2 come out, that wouldn't have necessarily pushed it that high over, you know, what it turned out to be.
Well, what happened was because a movie like that wasn't there, the movies that were there had more running room.
Right.
They actually filled the gap.
And, you know, obviously we see from this list of top 10 that it's still dominated by IP, but with often fresher perspectives on that. And also a big chunk of the box office was a holdover from the previous year with Avatar.
That's true.
The Way of Water, which had
come out. Number seven. That's right. How big it was. Yeah.
Right. There were a couple. Yeah. The Christmas.
John Wick is in there, which is cool. Right.
Yeah. Yes,
at number nine.
The Christmas box office gave an interesting overview of some of these kind of trends. You know, obviously, yeah, you mentioned Color Purple, one of the highest Christmas Day openings ever. But then there were some movies that I feel like maybe didn't do as well as, or you know, The Boys in the Boat did decently. That's not an awards movie, but that
maybe more than people thought. Yeah,
I think so. Yeah, but you know,
well, I'm not sure Color Purple and Wonka are awards movies.
Wonka definitely not. A movie that I feel like kind of sputtered a bit over Christmas, if you will, is Ferrari, which I feel like is a movie in serious trouble, I would say, beyond maybe some crafts. I don't know, despite it has a really good Penelope Cruz performance in there, but that opened over Christmas, didn't do super well, and that opened on a lot of screens. What's your take on that one?
Ferrari's a disappointment at the box office. It is an old-fashioned movie that I actually liked and enjoyed, but it is not, you know, I didn't put it on my top 10 or make a big fuss about it being one of the great movies of the year. Neither did anyone else. So it's simply not generating enough. You know, what happens is that people, you go in there and it's about a marriage and people fighting and all these races are not enough to generate the kind of interest that people need to feel for it to be some kind of must see at the box office.
You know, what did well, I think, for what it is, was The Iron Claw, which got a high cinema score as well. And people really love that movie. And we've already, it's not headed for Oscars, but that's a movie that people really are responding to. And I recognize that the X now bubble that I'm in isn't necessarily the best reader of the overall temperature of things, but there's a lot of
This is another family drama. This is a movie with emotion.
It's funny because it's like so dark and depressing for a family.
Very dark and depressing, but yet people respond to it emotionally. And I think that's the lesson that I take away from last year, from the Christmas box office. And, you know, the holdovers doing so well is just an example. I'm beginning to wonder if Paul Giamatti doesn't have a chance at Best Actor.
I feel like he is a major threat in that category.
Yeah, he could knock Coleman Domingo out. He could really make a mark. I actually wasn't sure that would happen, but it's so obvious now that movie is just taken a place in people's hearts. People really welcome it and embrace it.
Well, now it's primed to probably get the Best Original Screenplay Oscar now that slot Barbie has been vacated, which we learned yesterday.
That was a shocker because I bought into the argument that Greta Gerwig and Noah Baumbach made quite fervently. They feel very strongly that Barbie is an empty vessel, you know, that Barbie is something you project onto and that they created a character that didn't exist. So the Writers Guild agreed with that, but the Academy did not. So now it's going to be up against Oppenheimer and Poor Things. It's not as good for Barbie to be up against those films.
No. Yeah. And the interesting thing, you know, it's
the executive
writers
also.
Committee that made this decision. And that's Dana Stevens, Howard Rodman, and Eric Roth. Obviously, we know Eric Roth is a contender in that category as well for Killers of the Flower Moon. So he recused himself from the conversation around that movie. It's weird. Yeah, you know, I was looking at the list of Best Original Screenplay Oscar winners of the last 10, 15 years. I mean, there's a number of these that's like on these grounds, I would say like Green Book is kind of an adapted. I mean, it's like, that's a true story. Spotlight, Django Unchained is based on a spaghetti western.
It all has to do with prior IP. And so the Lego movie was another one, which was debated and went two different ways, apparently.
Where did that go ultimately?
Christopher Miller confirms that the Lego movie was moved to adapted despite being campaigned for in original.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's only fair when we're talking about Barbie and IP.
But it's the same thing. I think that must have been their precedent, honestly, to make this decision. I mean, it's not like... Lego Batman existed already. Well, Batman exists. Right. They were in actually in Lego movie, they're using more pre-existing characters than Barbie.
Yeah, I feel like now it has less of a chance.
It does. It's not good for it. That was the one I was really rooting for Barbie to actually win. So the other thing we're going to talk about is what's coming up in 2024. And I have to say, we ran a story with like 50 movies on it, a list. And I was going through it. And there are a lot of movies that I'm really looking forward to. I mean, we could talk for hours about this. A lot of filmmakers coming back. A lot of stuff that got pushed back, like Challengers and Dune 2, that are coming out next year. And Bike Riders, finally, coming out next year. We'll start with Challengers. All right, Luca Guadagnino, who we love. And it's a tennis world triangle, romantic triangle. And it's Josh O'Connor and Zendaya and Mike Faced, you know, who you might remember from West Side Story. It looks like they go back and forth. One of them gets married, then the other comes in again. It looks kinky to me. It looks sexy to me.
It's supposed to be. I mean, Luca has talked about, I'm sorry, Luca, I don't know him personally. Luca Guadagnino has talked about how he sort of shot the tennis scenes. I don't know anything about tennis, as kind of sex scenes in a way. And, you know, Josh O'Connor is both of them are very beautiful men. And there is something homoerotic about the marketing. And if these two don't kiss, like, I'm going to be pissed. It's interesting because Luca Guadagnino is such a kind of overachiever and overpromiser, and like, he has this like surfeit of projects that's constantly cascading around him, and then they fall away. But this year he's got two movies ready to go, which is Challengers, which we know got pushed. It was supposed to be the Venice opener. And then this movie Queer later in the year with Daniel Craig, that's a William S. Burroughs adaptation that is a more explicitly gay sounding project, as a Burroughs novel would be.
And given the title. Yeah. Now that's
obviously interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, the other big, big movie is Dune Part Two, of course. Also Zendaya. And of course Timothy Chalamet. The point to be made about Wonka, by the way, Timothy Chalamet opened that movie. He carries
he is capable
that
movie. Of opening it a is, movie. Yes.
It is arguable that this is the evidence that Timothée Chalamet is actually a movie star, because Dune was Dune. It may not have been Timothée Chalamet carried it and he did well with it, but it was beyond, it was a big, big, big name movie. So this is evidence. You know, Wonka didn't have to work. He made it work. And so we can now call Timothée Chalamet a movie star. And on the basis that he opens a movie and puts butts in seats, which many people don't, by the way. So anyway, Dune 2, I hear it's even better than the first one. I'm buying this. If I could say I'm anticipating anything, this and Furiosa are the two biggest anticipated movies for me.
And Dune is March 1st. Furiosa, we should expect at Cannes, as we saw with
everybody thinks
Fury Road.
Yeah.
One that I am trepidatiously very curious about is the Alex Garland film Civil War with Kirsten Dunst.
That's on my list.
This was a $50 million production for A24, which means it's its highest like in-house price tag for a movie they've ever done. The trailer, it looks a bit on the, I mean, it's like, it looks a little bit on the nose. Well, first of all, it's sort of hard to believe that Texas and California would come together amid some sort of secession crisis. Okay, I don't know about that. It does look a bit on the nose.
Near future.
Yeah, it's the near future and the country is collapsing. I mean, it's like everything that's happening around us, but just exaggerated in a sort of dystopian, not so dystopian sort of form. But, you know, he's a director that we're always, even when he doesn't hit the mark, we always keep an eye on him. You know, his stuff's always intriguing.
No, we love him. We I mean, his last movie didn't work.
Men was terrible.
Jessie Buckley. I have questions about it. I mean, I'm a big fan of hers, but I happened to see the Romeo and Juliet National Theater live thing that they put together with Josh O'Connor during the pandemic, and it didn't quite work. Because of her. And this, I don't think Men worked either. So I'm wondering if she is a star who can carry a movie
know
by
yet.
herself. Yeah. Anyway, so the other one that I'm looking forward to is Kinds of Kindness, which is the new Yorgos Lanthimos movie with a lot of the people who are in Poor Things returning. And it sounds like it has like three different story strands going through. And I'm curious, and it sounds like it goes back to what he's done in the past, more of a small scale movie than Poor Things.
Yes. And you were the first to report on what that title was. It was supposed to be, and I don't know what the hell kind of title that is. So it's for the best that they changed it. Yeah. I'm really excited about that one too. Another one for me that I'm curious about is, I don't know if this was on your radar, The Brutalist, the Brady Corbett film. You know, he's the director of Vox Lux and The Childhood of a Leader. Again, he's another one that even when it doesn't totally coalesce, there's visionary images behind it. And it stars Adrian Brody and Guy Pearce. And it's sort of a drama about an architect of some kind. And normally his movies show up at Venice. So I would expect that one to be there as well.
So the other one that got pushed back that was supposed to come out last year is Drive Away Dolls, which is Ethan Coen's comedy. Pedro Pascal is in it and Margaret Qualley. I'm really looking forward to that. It's written. It's so interesting. When Joel Coen went separate ways from Ethan with Macbeth, he co-wrote that with his wife, and she starred in it. Obviously, Frances McDormand, and in this case, Trisha Cook is the co-writer with Ethan. So each of these brothers has decided to collaborate with their wives on their solo features. So I'm excited about that. What's your next one?
You know, another weird one that's been floating around for a couple years that I don't know. Maybe it won't land this year. Is this new film from the director of Animal Kingdom, David Michaud. And he hasn't really done a good movie since then, if you ask me. And that was like...
Oh, he did that Timothy Chalamet.
Terrible, where... The King, terrible. Yeah. No, he's not. I don't know what's going on there. But this movie, Wizards, it's also an A24 movie. And it's New York Film Critics' last night's winner, Franz Rogowski, and Pete Davidson in a kind of stoner comedy that apparently has all these like scatological elements that are alienating test audiences, which is what I'm hearing anyway. But
I was expecting you to pick the new French director Léos Carax movie.
Oh, yeah, that was on there too. But there was another French one that I was going to pick that we probably are aligned on, which would be Emmanuel, the new film with Noémie Merlant as a woman who's sort of having an erotic journey of the self. And Naomi Watts is in this. And I'm very excited for Naomi Watts to have a bit of a renaissance this year.
She needs to come back.
She's in the Capote versus the Swans, the Gus Van Sant feud season that's coming out this year as well.
And then there's Gladiator 2, right? So Ridley Scott is moving forward, you know, with yet another big budget extravaganza, and this one stars Paul Mescal as Lucius, the nephew of the Joaquin Phoenix character from the last movie. And I just spoke to Ridley, and he told me that this was true, and he, you know, he did survive the end of the last movie, and they were tracking him and bringing him back into the story. And apparently the reason why Paul Mescal is someone who could handle a rigorous physical role, that hasn't been his defining characteristic so far. I mean, he looks good, but it's not like he's been doing super athletic parts, is that he was an Irish rugby player. And that and Ridley Scott said, that's brutal. That's brutal.
Well, we're all very excited to see the Paul Mescal. And hey, we both said it right this time.
We're pronouncing his name correctly from now on.
No, we're very excited about his transformation, physical and otherwise.
I mean, the other story, by the way, when we talked about Paul Giamatti getting into the Best Actor race, the issue there is that Andrew Scott, who I thought was just a shoo-in for All of Us Strangers, there doesn't seem to be as big a groundswell around All of Us Strangers as I was expecting that would push him into the Best Actor race. It's an interesting question.
Well, also, where is it? I mean, where is it playing other than select theaters still? I mean, a lot of people want to see that one. And the same with Zone of Interest. It's not available.
Very limited. Yeah.
Yeah. No, the release is all wrong on that one. And this,
I feel that too. So what we have coming up is a shit show. No, it's a lot of stuff coming up. The Golden Globes are interesting because there's no longer this round delay that it used to be really fun. And now it's over.
You know, one thing that's interesting, we've learned today that apparently Taylor Swift will be attending the Golden Globes. Unverified, but this is out in the Taylor universe now. Does that mean she's winning the first ever cinematic box office achievement award? I don't know if she would go if she weren't winning it, even though that's one that I feel like belongs to Greta, whatever the hell that prize is. It's one that feels like it belongs to go to Greta Gerwig. Exactly.
Yeah, it's got to go to Barbie. All right. But speaking of which, they determined that despite the fact that this was the year that Greta Gerwig directed the biggest ever movie directed by a woman and the number one movie of the year, that hiring of women behind the camera, hiring of people of color, all of it, terrible. Terrible stuff.
Just as bad as ever. And the promises were performative. You know, that's what these studies are sort of telling us. It's just terrible. But below, at any level of the line, it was not good.
No. Okay. So going forward on the awards week. So first we have the Governor's Awards on the 9th. And then on the 12th, we have the AFI Awards. And then on that weekend, we have the Critics' Choice Awards. So it's never ending.
And then we go into Sundance.
Then we go
later.
And the voting is going on between January 11th and January 16th, with the nominations on the 23rd. So the nominations often come during Sundance, which is one of the reasons why I'm not going to go. I'm staying home and watching it on my sofa, doing the digital version.
Yes, I think that happens starting the 24th, which is the day I'm coming back. So I'll be there for a week, and I will keep you apprised of everything that I see and do.
So we will keep going on Screen Talk. But anyway, so it's just a very crowded, you know, then we have SAG and DGA nominations coming. This is when you find out what's really going on. Is when you get these nominations, when the Guild nominations come in.
Can't wait.
All right. Well, I'll see you in a week, and we will continue.
Sounds good.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.